talking about chicken a la king,
mango and garbanzo, tabbouleh,
grilled potatoes and vegetables with roasted garlic and basil,
zucchini ziti,
granola fruit bar.
Look at all this beautiful food.
Guys, it's an exciting one. Welcome to Green Eggs and Dan, where I talk to amazing people with amazing minds, but all I care about is what is in their fridge, and what a fridge it is today. He is an actor, an all-around extraordinary human being, and now a cookbook author. His new book is called Food with Friends, and I cannot wait to talk about it. You know him as Mitchell on Modern Family, but he is so much more to me. Please welcome Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome, Jesse. It's so good to see you. It's been a long time. We met in New York years ago. Before Modern Family times, and we loved our little coffee shop, Joe, that we used to go to.
Yeah, I was trying to remember where we initially met, and I was certain it was Joe, and then I was like, no, that can't be right. But yeah, you would like sit there and write.
Yeah, that was my office.
It's so funny. I met you there, and I met another really good friend of mine there, Nick Citone, who's a really great writer as well.
There was something about the energy in there that just brought the Hemingway out of all of us.
Exactly.
So your fridge here is blowing me away. If you guys want to see Jesse's fridge, you can see it on my Instagram at StandUpDan. All right, Jesse, this is probably the best fridge of season 4 thus far. So congratulations.
No.
Yes. No, I'm telling you. And I told you guys, I tell everyone not to stage it, but this looks staged. Did you not stage this? Don't lie to me.
I didn't stage it. I had just gotten rid of a whole bunch of crap that was in there because it's tough to keep it clean during COVID. And my mother-in-law had left a whole bunch of stuff there that was going bad. So I did just take a lot of stuff out, but it's stuff that needed to come out anyways.
Okay. Well, if this is it pared down, I can't imagine what it's like when it's full to the brim because it looks very tastefully full right now.
Yeah, I like my fridge to be full, but I don't like it to be jam-packed. If you buy something, you don't want to have to stress about where to put it.
Yeah. So there's a couple exciting things here. Number one, loving the blue bottle iced coffee on the bottom row here, right next to the cannabis drink, which and it's all the way at the bottom shelf. So it's in reach of children if they need to grab it. A lot of people are stocking up on this cannabis stuff, especially during pandemic, is what I noticed for this season.
It's really delicious, too. And it gives you the tiniest little, it just takes the edge off just a little. It really doesn't get you very high.
Yeah, I think the reason this is becoming in vogue is because pandemic hit and we all became alcoholics.
Correct.
And then it was like, I need an alternative to 3/4 of a bottle of wine a night. So you have one can of this and you feel okay and it chills you out.
That's right.
Now on your second row here, I'm very curious about this cultured buttercream. What's that about?
Oh, that's just buttermilk, I think. Oh,
buttermilk. Okay. What do you do with buttermilk?
Well, I don't use it a lot, but my cooking partner, Julie, who I wrote my cookbook with, is from the South and she's, uses it all the time. I was probably at that moment when I took the photo, I believe I was making either biscuits or I was doing a buttermilk brined roasted chicken.
Oh, yeah. Samin Nosrat is into that too. I hear that's supposed to be amazing. I've never done it.
Yeah, it's really, really good. We have a recipe in our book for buttermilk roast chicken on top of croutons.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun because then all the juices will get absorbed by the croutons.
Yes, correct.
I like that. Now, this I'm very excited about because I'm also a Girl and Doug groupie.
You know, I just discovered them. My husband actually ordered a whole bunch of stuff from them for me. And I was a bit overwhelmed at first because there were so many unique packages of produce that came that I honestly did not know what to do with them. And they give you sort of a guide card and, explaining what the flavor profile is. But, after that, you're kind of on your own, as far as I know.
They have such an interesting story. They were supplying the best restaurants in California with food, like French Laundry and all this and all that. And then they just pivoted to these boxes that come out every, month or so. They had a Valentine's Day box that was great. And their produce is the best stuff I've ever seen in my life. It's crazy.
It's insane. I had a lot of these really beautiful, tiny little radishes. And they were white and pink and red and just gorgeous. And
yeah.
I'm not a massive radish fan, but the one way I do love to eat them is with butter.
Mm-hmm.
And so my friend Alan Bennett from Heavily and Bennett Aprons had just given me this really delicious French butter I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but I just, it's on my Instagram page. I posted a photo, but there's, I sort of spread the butter on one part of the plate and just arranged the radishes around it. And it looked like the most high-end appetizer. And it was just radishes and butter.
Radish butter and some good salt. Oof, that is the best. Big fan of the girl and Doug. And then I think we'll go to, I like you've got a bunch of these like cool, like, I don't know what to call them, like indie preserves, maybe?
Yeah, I think I got that at Erewhon. There's an Erewhon that opened up. Are you still in the like Los Feliz Silver Lake area?
I'm in West Hollywood.
You are? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Erewhon opened up around here in Silver Lake. And so I actually think I was using that for a compound butter that I made.
Oh, wow.
And then there's definitely some homemade pimento green chili cheese in that little container.
Oh, interesting. Pimento cheese. I've never... Is the recipe for that in the book?
Yes. Yeah, we spread it on tortillas and then roll them up and then dice them.
What is pimento cheese? What's the base? Like, what kind of cheese?
It's just a sharp cheddar and then you canned pimentos.
Interesting.
Yeah.
If I'm ever at a supermarket and I need to get a good cheese, but it like the selection is not good, I feel like Cabot cheddar is always such a solid cheese that you can find at any supermarket.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's my little hot tip there. And then let's go to the freezer, because the freezer is what it's like. Come for the fridge, stay for the freezer.
Oh my God, I'm friends with the founder of Jenny's Ice Cream, and she has subscribed me to her every few months. She just sends a box of their newest flavors, and I also was desperately trying to rein it in the past few weeks.
Right.
So you can't tell from this part of the fridge because it's just booze and ice cream.
No, it doesn't look like it all. It looks like you went on the fanciest bender ever.
Truly. But some of the ice cream actually might need to get tossed because I have a freezer in my garage as well. And there's more pints in there. So,
oh my God.
Yeah. It's overflowing.
I haven't gone down a deep dive of the Jenny's ice cream. Is it delicious?
It is. Now, if you want just like your standard vanilla, it might not be your jam, but like she comes up with really interesting flavors. There was a everything bagel flavor that she came out with.
Come on. That sounds awful. That sounds awful. Was there garlic in it?
I don't think there was garlic.
Okay.
There might've been, but she does a gooey, a gooey cake, a gooey butter cake one.
Okay. Yeah. You should have opened with that one and then ease me into the everything bagel. And then you've got good booze. You got your Kettle One. You got some, is this Milagro tequilas? All good. What is this Dano's dumpling? This looks kind of exciting.
Very, very, very interesting. So this is, so in the pandemic, I don't know if you were doing the same thing, but I was ordering a lot of my produce and pantry items from restaurants that were also selling, you know, through their provider to sort of keep them afloat.
Yeah.
And not that they really need it, because they're probably one of the more fancy and famous restaurants in all of LA, but John and Vinny's had some really great stuff. And they started selling these Dano dumplings, and they're just frozen dumplings, and you fry them in a pan, and there's a sauce that comes with them, and they're just absolutely delicious. So
Oh, wow.
I have a few bags of those, and you can get them, I think, on the John and Vinny website still.
I love that. And then what's this? Is this baby food, this yummy stuff?
Yeah. It's actually, yummy baby food.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if it's yummy. That's the name of the brand. I assume it's yummy.
It better be with that name. I mean, although it does sound like they're covering up for really bad tasting baby food by naming it yummy. And then what's this stuff over here?
That's frozen... that's chilled cookie dough. I don't remember the brand. I wish I'd turned that out for you. But my friends, Jen Atkin and Mike Rosenthal, for the past year have been just sending cookies to the house of all their friends. Every few months we get a cookie delivery. And this past month, they just sent frozen cookie dough. So
wow,
we're working for it this time.
So my question for you is this. How do you stay skinny? But it's also like there's something about the more famous you get, the more stuff you just get sent to you all the time. And I'm not at your level of fame, but it's this sort of a snowball of things being sent to the house is happening, and I'm starting to have a little bit of a tough time. It's very hard to not eat everything.
Well, you feel bad because the thing is, I was really, really trying. Like all of January, I really did no booze. I was trying to eat healthy, and I was just getting, a deep dish Chicago style frozen pizza sent to the house from friends and cocktail kits. And it's just, you feel bad because, I mean, granted, a lot of stuff can keep in the freezer until you're ready to go back to being a glutton. But, in the meantime, it's like the girl and Doug produce is a perfect example. Like it's like a challenge to use it all before it goes bad. And it's such a beautiful produce. You want to really honor it. And
yeah.
It honestly sets you up for like basically a really tough homework assignment or like a really difficult episode of Chopped where it's right. Like, you just have to like figure it out before, it goes right. Bad.
It's like, I have Jerusalem artichokes and I have pimento cheese. I got to figure out something.
But also, how wonderful would it have been if like all this stuff came to us when we were, struggling artists in New York? Like, you're famous and you can afford it, they're going to send it to you for free.
Exactly. Exactly. It makes no sense. It makes no sense whatsoever. But I think that, you seem to be, here's what has been annoying me with this podcast is I've met so many famous people who don't care about food, and it just like the only reason I want to be famous is so that I can get amazing reservations to places and get like that extra dish. Like, this is on us. This is for, because we love you.
Yeah.
And I feel like you probably take advantage of you. You do the right thing. You.
Well, I love to eat and I love to cook. Obviously, I also wouldn't have written a cookbook, but the compliments of the chef dish is always. It's always a gamble too, because you go to those certain places and you think, oh, they're going to send out a lot of stuff. So you under order and then they right. don't send out anything. And then, or the opposite happens. You're trying to gauge. It's like this, ABC Kitchen in New York is always so good to me.
Right.
And it's like this weird, it's this weird game of dare. Like, we're like, I'm going to dare you to send it out, or you're going to dare me to order dessert. But it's like the will they, won't they? Like, I'm looking at them like, if I don't order dessert, is something coming? I'm trying to read their face. Because also, I don't want to ask. You don't want to ask for anything for free.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, that's always a gamble.
It is a funny dance. Yeah.
I did a play on Broadway 2016 called Fully Committed about a restaurant reservationist at a very high-end restaurant. And I play all the characters. I played the chef. I played the maitre d'. I played the customers who were calling in to make reservations. And my research for that play was going to a lot of five-star or Michelin-star restaurants in New York.
Oh, poor boy. What difficult research you had to do.
The most expensive research. The producers were like, this is a terrible idea, because they had to pay for it. But my favorite part of the whole experience, obviously the food was amazing, but was I got to go back to the reservation rooms and talk to the reservationists. So I got to learn about, the different codes that they have for certain people, if people are difficult to handle, there's a little code that goes next to their name. So when they call in, maybe they don't get the treatment that they think that they're going to get. And, but they also make notes about if you had celebrated an anniversary with them, and they're very thorough. And a lot of those people, I wouldn't say they're friends of mine, but now when I call, we have a rapport, and they help me out with the table now and then. So that is definitely a perk. But, I had to do a one-man show on Broadway to get that perk. So it's I really did
work
for it. Yeah. I think it's worth it. You're allowed to get a 7:30 reservation. My friend is the reservations person for Carbone in New York City.
That's a good one. That's very difficult to get into.
Yeah. And she tells me, she's like, there are some people that will just come by and just give her envelopes full of cash. And just be like, here you go. And it's like, she's just making reservations, but it's wild. I am on the Balthazar Pestis reservation line list. So that's my fancy claim to fame. And it's funny because they deny that it even exists. They're like, there's no private reservations line. So what happened that you decided to write this cookbook? I feel like that is not an easy thing to do.
No, not at all. I've always toyed with the idea of writing something. I didn't know if it was to be like a memoir or like a book of essays. But I had a blog with my friend Julie. You know, basically we just started cooking together and we housed our recipe. Like we'd photograph them and put them on Instagram and people would ask for the recipe. So we started a blog and that blog caught the attention of Clarkson Potter, really great publishing house. They do Ina Garten's books. They do Chrissy Teigen's books. And basically approached me and Julie about, you know, writing a cookbook. And I feel like for me, I mean, I have such reverence for people who are chefs and are you know, really well-known home cooks. And it took someone pushing me into the deep end to have the confidence to do this, because I there's a bit of imposter syndrome. You know, I'm someone who's known for my work on television and stage. And it's like, you know, are they going to roll my eyes when I appear on the cover of a cookbook?
Right.
But I think, you know, it comes from a very genuine place. And it's, I'm a cook who is self-taught a bit. My friend Julie went to culinary school, and that's one of the reasons we really bonded. I sort of forced her to come to my house and give me, you know, free tutorials and like knife skills and, you know, flavor profiles. And she's passed along a lot of the knowledge that she got from culinary school onto me. And it's the book is about like me kind of learning how to be a better cook and more ambitious cook in the kitchen through a good friend who knows how to do it already. So that's why we called it Food Between Friends.
And I like it. I like this type of cookbook because I feel like the majority of the cookbooks on the market are chefs who just want to like just show you how fucking amazing they are. And like, you know, I dare you to try to make one thing in the French Laundry cookbook. You know,
that's a coffee table book.
Yes.
I also got, I love him, but Grant Atkins and in Chicago, he just came out with a amazing cocktail book from the aviary. And it's so beautiful. And I just, I flipped through and I was like, I don't know. Like it's to prep the ingredients takes like 4 days.
Yeah. If you tried to make something from the Alinea cookbook, it would be like, okay, you need a hydrogen tank.
Move to a house with a larger power grid is step number one.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, so that's refreshing to have like a real, you know, let's say a classically trained chef and then an amateur cook going at it together, because you know it's going to be accessible stuff.
It's extremely accessible. I mean, we want people to really cook from the book. And, you know, I mean, I took a lot of inspirations from the cookbook I reach for, the cookbooks I reach for a lot on my shelves. And, you know, they are like Padma Lakshmi, who's I know she was on your show, and she has a really accessible, really flavorful cookbook. Chrissy Teigen, I think, did a really amazing job with her cookbook. And, you know, even though that they're celebrities, they really know what they're talking about in the kitchen. And they proved, you know, themselves, I think, in the industry.
Yeah. And by the way, Padma Lakshmi and you have that same thing in common of like, they don't know how much free food to prepare for. She doesn't know, like when she goes to a restaurant, like people go nuts when she goes to a restaurant. And it's just like,
we've had many dinners together. She's a very good friend of mine. And one time when she was in LA, we went to Tuamek, which is Chef Ludo's very, very intimate, tiny dining experience that he has. And you have to like, you know someone to get a table there. And Padma obviously knew the right person. And they sent out a lot of stuff. And, you know, you could tell that the kitchen staff was really excited that she was there. And she picked up on that. And as we were leaving, she just said, does anyone want a photo? Does anyone want a photo with me? And of course they all did. But I just thought it was so funny that she offered first. Like she sensed that they wanted one, but were afraid to ask. And so she broke the ice.
That's awesome. She's a delightful person. And her cookbook is amazing. Are you seeing that? Like, what are you seeing? Who are who's the main demographic going for the book?
It's hard. I mean, it's been out for what? 2 weeks now, almost 2 weeks. I don't know. I don't know. How do you find out that information? Should we call Clarkson Potter right now? I feel like, you know, a lot of the people who love Modern Family are obviously buying it, but I'm really excited that some friends of mine who I didn't send the book to that are, you know, culinary people are cooking from it and liking it. So that means a lot to me. I'm hoping that it's just a lot of people who love to cook delicious meals at home, but, you know, don't want to spend hours and hours and hours preparing things. You know, they want dinner to come together in an hour or so. And, you know, I think at least that's what I'm, that's sort of what I'm seeing from the people who are reposting, buying the book on my Instagram. It's really, you know, it runs the gamut, but it's,
yeah,
it all seems like very, they all seem like accessible civilians.
Is recipe testing the best thing or the worst thing? Are you just constantly filling up the kitchen with food that's not going to be used? Or, I mean, I could see that being a double-edged sword.
It's definitely, it's time consuming and costly because, you know, I'm going to say like 60% of the time things don't work out perfectly and you have to try again. So it's like, you know, you're buying ingredients multiple times, and the recipe testing process is really, it's rough. It's hard.
Yeah.
Fortunately, you know, I was able to do it with a good friend of mine, who has developed recipes before. So, you know, it wasn't totally the blind leading the blind. Neither one of us had written a book before, but she at least kind of knew what she was doing in that department. So, and then you, on top of that, have to hire people to double test or triple test your recipes to make sure that they actually work and that the instructions are clear. So, you know, that's another, you know, costly part of creating a book.
Well, that's, yeah, I guess that's part of the joy of a cookbook is that you waste the ingredients so that we don't have to.
Yeah.
Jesse's chicken recipe calls for marinating the chicken in buttermilk, which begs the question, what the fuck is buttermilk? Long story short, it's fermented milk. Anyone else horny? It's a byproduct of making butter, and due to its high acidity, it staves off bacteria and has a much longer shelf life out of the fridge. The acidity also helps tenderize meats, which is why it's so great as a marinade. So go out and get yourself some fermented milk. All right, back to Jesse. All right, we're up to the part of the show where I ask you the same questions I ask every guest. The first question is, what is your earliest food memory?
I remember, I was raised in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and my mom would make green chili chicken enchiladas, but her recipe, she would pour a can of cream of mushroom soup over the casserole when she was done with it, and that would sort of absorb down into the tortillas. It was delicious.
Not a bad move. It sounds like a decent move.
I think, yeah, a lot of casseroles in the 80s had canned soups involved.
Yeah, that was the garnish, was a canned soup. Okay, what is your death row meal?
Probably green chili chicken enchiladas, actually.
Nice, nice. What is the best high-end meal that you've ever eaten?
Oh, man. Gosh, I mean, we French Laundry, probably.
Yeah.
I've been able to go up there a few times and have really, it's just such a special experience. They really make it worth your time and money. It's not by any stretch of the imagination the cheapest place to go. So they really want to make sure that they're giving you an experience. And that's probably, it was somewhere I always dreamed of going, and it definitely lived up to expectations.
Yeah, I think that, so that's Thomas Keller's restaurant in Northern California, and it definitely, you have such high expectations going in, like, this better be the most beautiful setting I've ever seen. And it kind of is. Like, it's like nestled in this little area across the street from the farm where they grow the stuff that you're eating. And it's just like the most romantic. And the kitchen's this big open kitchen with like huge windows. And these like worker bee chefs are just like looking so precise and careful, and I don't know, there's something really special about that place.
It's performance art. I mean, Alenia was the same way when I got to go in Chicago, which was one of my dreams to go there as well. That's probably a very close second, just for the production of it all and the theatrics of it.
Yeah, I bet. I haven't been to Alenia, but I mean, that's number one on the bucket list.
Yeah, for sure.
Switching gears, what is the best low-end meal you have ever had?
I've had my friend Sarah Carey, who works alongside Martha Stewart. She ordered, well, it's a little low-end, high-end. She made chicken fingers, but then paired it with caviar and champagne.
Whoa.
Delicious.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
I recreated it for my anniversary this year because we were, you know, in lockdown. So I asked Justin what he wanted me to make him. He's like, I want chicken fingers and caviar. So I did my version of it too.
I love that. What is your favorite drunk food?
Pizza.
Pizza? Yeah.
Usually when I think back, I mean, I don't get drunk as much as I used to and when I was living in New York, because you would just walk everywhere, hop in the subway, and you know, you have to drive here in LA. I just always remember New York, going out and then like stumbling into Joe's Pizza and at like 3 a.m. and so good.
New York is so much more amenable to regular just alcoholic drinking, and like. And then we come to LA and, you know, it's like, oh, well, I have to wake up for my hike. And then I have my...
Exactly.
But whenever I go back to New York, there's like a 4-day period of like just my body needs to transition into the drinking. And it's just like, it's an awful, awful like adjustment period that needs to happen.
And also, just because the bars stay open till 4 doesn't mean we need to be there till 4. We have to keep reminding ourselves that.
Oh, but it does. Do you have a hangover cure, a perfect hangover cure?
I do not, and I would love to get it from someone else if they have one. I mean, I usually do Alka-Seltzer.
Alka-Seltzer. Is there a hangover meal that you go for when you're hungover? Are you like a greasy person? Or are you like a non?
I would do like a hamburger, like a breakfast hamburger.
Like with an egg on top?
Or the rest of the pizza that I had from the night before when I was drunk.
The shameful leftovers.
Yes.
Who is your favorite celebrity food personality besides yourself? You're in that category now. It could be a chef. It could be a host. It could be a whomever.
I mean, I really enjoy Padma. A lot. She's just, I think she's so smart and so funny. She's one of those people that says things and she doesn't mean it to be funny, but it is. Like once I was sitting at lunch with her and her daughter's name is Krishna, and she was talking about Krishna's first rave in Iceland. And I was like, wait a minute, I have to address a few of these things. First of all, Iceland, so let's start there. But Krishna's first rave, so there was another one after it. Like they went to like the ice, the lights in Iceland when they're like, the sky goes crazy.
Northern Lights,
some
yeah.
sort of like a, thank you. And there was some sort of a music festival that I guess Padma was calling a rave, and Krishna went with her. And I was like, Krishna's gone to more than one of these in Iceland. And I could not stop making fun of Padma for saying it. And she just, the minute she hears someone else say it, she's like, oh yeah, that is pretty ridiculous. And she just... starts laughing at herself, and that's one of the reasons I love her so much.
She's super underrated funny. Like she's got like she's got comedy chops. Like her timing and her like kind of deadpanness.
So deadpan.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I kind of hate when beautiful people are good at comedy. It's like stop stepping on our turf. This is what we do.
At our wedding, we were really thinking about the food a lot, and Padma was at the wedding, and I made the mistake of asking her what she thought of the food, and like, you know, it's typical. You're feeding 300 people or however many people. And she like went into like Top Chef mode. And she's like, the proteins were delicious, but the sides were dry. I was like, Jesus, I didn't really want to know. I was sort of just making small talk.
Oh my God. Pack your knives and go.
Pack your knives and go.
What is your desert island food? So you're on a desert island. There's one food you can eat for the rest of your life. You will never, ever get tired of it. What is it?
Sushi, I guess.
That's not bad. That's a good desert island food.
I'm thinking because I'm right near the ocean, it's like going to be wildly fresh.
You're taking it a little too literally. We can fly things into the island that are very fresh from anywhere over the world.
Fine. Katsuya sushi.
Okay. Deal. Is there a food that you cannot stand eating?
I really don't like organ meats, sweetbreads.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bummer. Hold on. Is there a way that I can convince you?
I've tried some really delicious versions of them.
Yeah.
In Paris, I went to Clown Bar in Paris and they had...
Oh, did you have the veal brain?
I did. And it was actually very good.
Yeah.
It was almost like matzo ball soup.
Yeah.
But it was just the visual of it. Like they didn't try and...
No, it's a little bowl that has a brain in it that looks like a brain, like the two hemispheres are still connected. And there's like a little broth in there as well.
And it's delicious, truly delicious. But I mean, so I do try it. It's just, it's rough for me.
That's a tough like brain though. Like most other cultures, they take brain and they like deep fry it. That one is just like, hey, we just pluck this out of the animal's head.
I mean, just... they surely did more than that. But like, but it is like, well, maybe that's my next cookbook, just different ways to prepare brain.
Yes.
It will not be a bestseller. There was another thing at Clown Bar I remember where it was like a pigeon dish and like they leave the talons on and the talons are just facing you like these crumpled talons.
We shot an episode of Modern Family in Paris, and my character goes off and like has a day in Paris by himself and tries to pass as French and goes to a cafe and orders the pigeon, not knowing what it is. And it comes and he has to like try and eat it and freaks out, and comedy ensues.
Oh, it sounds like it. I love it. Final question. This is my favorite question, which is, what is your restaurant pet peeve?
Oh, there's a few.
Yes, here we go.
I hate when they come to the table with the food and it's like an auction and they just announce what the plate is. And you, if you're with a group of people, you have to like claim it. And sometimes you're trying to help, like say, oh, it's over there. But they think the server thinks, oh, it's yours. So then they come to you and you're like, no. He had, and like, so I get way too involved in like making sure everyone's plate goes to the right places. And it just causes chaos. I also hate when you have a very full table because we've ordered too much or whatever, you know, the table's too small, and they sort of hover the plate over and they just say like, I'm coming in, and you have to just like mad scramble, like clearing space for the plate to land. Right. That really bothers
me. Right. You're like, you're playing air traffic control and have to like get ready for the landing.
Usually this happens like at a Sunday brunch, you know, we're not talking that this doesn't happen at like the, you know, fancy yeah. restaurants. So those are two of my big restaurant complaints.
Those are very good. Do you find that when you are recognized, you get better service, worse service? Is it more annoying because they want to be like super duper nice, or what happens there?
It's either way too. No, that's not true. I either get very good service or like too attentive, but then occasionally, and this has happened a few times, I actually complained, where they like basically abandon me because they think I want to be left alone.
Ah.
I do remember the restaurant, but I'm not going to name it because I actually do love the chef.
Oh, bummer.
I had to complain to management because it's like, we no one attended to us. Like they were at that table, you know, all the tables around us, but no one ever came and asked us how our meal was. You know, we were trying to get the check and no one was like making eye contact with us. And the general manager's response was, well, we just assumed you wanted to be left alone. I was like, well, what gives you that idea?
I'm out at a restaurant.
I'm a pretty friendly person. Like, I just, anyway.
You don't give off the vibe of a leave me alone celebrity.
No.
Yes. Anyone who's listening to this, if you see Jesse, run up right to him and just like hug him. He loves it.
That's too far.
Awesome. Jesse, tell everyone where they can find you, where they can find the book, all the things.
So you can find me on Instagram at Jesse Tyler. Justin, my husband, set up a TikTok. I don't know the name of it because it's not on my phone. He does it all. Like he'll like record me doing something and then post it. And like the next day he's like, oh, you went viral on TikTok yesterday. I was like, oh, Jesus.
You're like, I was popping a zit, dude. Don't put that on blast.
But Food Between Friends is available wherever books are sold. You can go to julieandjessecook.com and there's like a lot of our blog recipes from the old days up there and also links to where you can buy the books. I always encourage people to obviously buy books at their local bookshops right now. So, or order awesome. Them from local bookshops. So,
guys, get the cookbook. It's really great. I've leafed through it and I love how accessible it is because my pet peeve is, again, it's one of my favorite cookbooks, but like any of like Yotam Ottolenghi's cookbooks, like the Jerusalem cookbook, you need like a pantry the size of a football stadium to make a salad. And it's just a little much.
Very true.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jesse. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. So good to see you.
This episode of Green Eggs and Dan was produced by Andrew Steven and edited by Jordan Aaron. Executive produced by Jeff Umbro and The Podglomerate. You can find more of their podcasts at thepodglomerate.com. The theme music is Beautiful Food by Idan, and the interstitial music is by Breakmaster Cylinder. If you like this show, please tell a friend, share an episode, leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. It's really important to us, guys. Please do it. If you want more Green Eggs and Dan action, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at StandUpDan. Also, we have a YouTube page where you can actually see me and my guests going through their fridge in addition to other videos. Just type in Green Eggs and Dan in YouTube. like and subscribe, please. We need a lot of subscribers on that page. You will really enjoy it. It's a very fun element of the show.
The Podglomerate, a sonic universe.